Support for Sound Effect comes from WSECU. Local to Washington, WSECU is a credit union founded in public service. Today, WSECU serves more than 260,000 members. More information is available at wsecu.org. WSECU, serving Washington since 1957.
So it's Saturday night. And people are tuning in.
It's live.
We're not doing it tape.
The only time we've done a live show.
Right.
And it happens to be April Fool's Day.
Right.
We interrupt our regularly scheduled programming for the following special report.
Good evening. Approximately 7 minutes ago at 6:53 p.m., the Space Needle collapsed.
Hey, I'm Gabriel Spitzer. This is Sound Effect. And no, the Space Needle is just fine. It's still standing, tall and pointy as ever. But on April 1st, 1989, this is what greeted people when they tuned into the show almost live. It was kind of a local version of Saturday Night Live run by these guys.
My name is Steve Wilson. I was the director, sometimes writer, and an alleged performer on Almost Live for 15 years.
My name's John Keister. I was the host of Almost Live for 10 years.
And on this night, they aired this very real-looking and quite honestly terrifying fake news story.
Fortunately, the needle was nearly empty when the accident occurred. A maintenance man who was working on the lower level has apparently been taken to Harborview's emergency room for minor injuries. Structural damage to the surrounding buildings is extensive. The Space Needle itself is beyond repair.
And it also did a cutaway of an eyewitness, which was Tracy Conway's first role. And she went way over the top.
I was walking along Mercer here, and I heard this sound. It was like thunder, and I looked up, and it was swaying. It went over. It was like somebody just kicked the bottom out from under it. You wouldn't believe it.
And it showed the pictures.
In those days, we had just gotten in the very beginnings of what later became computer animation, and this tool that the art department got was called the Paint Box.
Paint Box. You could put anything in anywhere.
Oh, that looks real.
That does look
real.
And
it actually did look pretty good.
If you lived here in Seattle and you lived on Queen Anne or Capitol Hill or whatever, you'd look out the window and go, still standing.
That's a joke.
No. Everybody else who's watching it, they're freaking out.
Right.
Apparently, we shut down the 911 lines.
So that people with real emergencies
couldn't get through.
And then people called King to pull a April Fool's Day joke on King because of this, and they said, my grandfather had a heart attack. I dialed 911. I didn't get through, and he died because of you. And so there were three or four calls like that that King believed were real. So when I thought and they thought that we might have been responsible, in some way for the deaths of two or three people, and I was like, I'm in trouble on a level that I couldn't conceive of being in this much trouble.
I do remember that a woman named Kim Kimmy was the PR director for the Space Needle. She was furious and she was going to sue us. And then like by Monday it had blown over and it was a big laugh. And we were like, wow, this little TV show pulled this stunt off. Nobody got hurt. Everybody believed it. And she's like calling up, how can we get more publicity out of this? Do we have any regrets about that? Not now.
Although I will say that when I heard that people, for example, had driven over from Central Washington to help with what they thought was this humanitarian disaster, that they would need medical volunteers, things like that, I can't imagine how pissed off those people were that drove over the pass to come over here and then they find out that it's just a joke, how pissed off they must have been. And I did feel bad about that.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, for at least a solid month, whenever I left the house and I was walking down the street, there'd be somebody like, hey, way to go. Way to go, dip.
When you look back at things from the perspective of a new time and place, they tend to look different. Well, that's our theme for the show today. The benefit of hindsight, how a little time passing can reveal the things that we were once blind to. It's coming up right here on Sound Effect from KNKX.
Thank you.
This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're telling stories about the benefit of hindsight. For the first 14 years of her life, Sarah Feigl was kind of just waiting for adulthood to kick in. Growing up in Lake Bluff, Illinois, she didn't care if she was picked last in gym class, and she remembers being unfazed by stuff that other kids found gross.
You know, when you're kids and they have those smelly markers and everybody hates the black licorice one, like I just always like faked it. Like I just thought, oh, I didn't get a good whiff and I don't feel like keep doing this. You know, I just want to move on with whatever we're doing, you know.
Well, moments like that one with the markers.
So when I was 15, my friends kind of started getting into like perfumes and body sprays and stuff like that. And I just always thought when they would spray it, like I didn't get a good whiff, like I didn't understand like how it worked. And then one day my friend was like spraying her new body spray all over the place and she annoyed me that day. And so I was like a little ticked with her and she asked me like, well, how does it smell? And I was like, this doesn't smell like anything. Like you've just wasted $12. Like it's just purple water and you're just spraying it around. Like, this is so stupid. It was supposed to smell like lavender. And so she said that and it was like the first time that someone that I had to like really think of like, what did lavender smell like? And my mom had like a lavender bush in her garden and everything and I was like, okay, but like, I can't think of anything. And like my whole brain was just like going through every memory like, well, grass, does grass smell? No, I don't think so. And then like flowers, do flowers smell? I don't really know. And like, I just would get, was just walking to my house just being like, I can't think of anything. I'm just like going through the memory banks just trying to remember like, what do cookies, you know, like had to smell food at some point. Like, did you know, you know, like fart and poop, like did you never notice? Like, but I didn't. Like, I don't think I've ever smelled anything. And so it was a very odd realization. When I got home, I told my dad, I was like, you know, I can't think of a moment that I smelled, and his mom doesn't have a sense of smell, and so, and my cousin doesn't have a sense of smell, so it's kind of hereditary, I think. So he was unfazed a little by it, and his way of testing it was that, so my brother went to Taco Bell and, you know, ate a bunch of food and then put me in this really little linen closet and then farted, like just came in and like let loose and then shut the door, and they were like, all right, you're in a confined space with like our Taco Bell farts, like do you smell anything? And I was like, no, I don't smell anything. That was how I knew. I remember kind of being more embarrassed that I didn't know, because you're 15 and you're like, how did you not realize you didn't have a sense for so long? But I think I just didn't. I've gone to a few doctors where they've like looked up and I've done like CAT scans and it's just nothing has ever come up. It's just how it is. And so I just assume it's like hereditary. Sometimes I get a little sad about it just because like I want to know what everyone else is experiencing. I would love to know just like what flowers smell like, just because that one is very odd, because it's like, I assume it's sugary. I don't quite know. Like there's certain smells that I find I would like to know what they smell like, mainly because people explain them as bad and good. And so like weed's a good one where they say it smells like a skunk and a skunk smells bad, but then people will be like, oh, you smell that? And I'd be like, why would, you know what I mean? Like, why is a skunk smell bad, but then in like a marijuana, it smells, it's okay that it smells like that, you know? What do I smell like? So like remembering to put deodorant on is extremely difficult because like I've never smelled an armpit. I've never like smelled that bad thing to make sure that I didn't do it. I will say that like that's one of my hardest things is like living alone. There was one time where I left the stove on and melted an entire plastic spoon. And I like went in the kitchen and I was like, did I have Alfredo sauce? Like, I don't remember doing that. And I was like, oh my God, that's a spoon. And I had this huge headache because I was burning plastic for like 3 hours. So it does affect my sense of taste. It's hard because like I've never known anything different. So people will ask, but it's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to taste like, you know? I accidentally opened a jar of spaghetti sauce and I couldn't remember if it was open or if I just opened it. And it looks fine, but I don't know that. And so I have to like bring it to work and like embarrassingly like ask someone to smell it because I'll never know. And I do get a lot of like food poisoning because of that. Like I always, because I think everything's fine and I eat it. And then usually I was supposed to throw it out maybe a couple days ago. People will ask me like, well, what does coffee taste like? And then like, I question it because I'm like, well, okay, how would I explain coffee? And then I'm like, I guess it's just like a hot water that feels denser. And then like, they'll kind of elaborate where they'll be like, well, what about tea? Like, do you taste the different types of tea? And then like, all of a sudden I realize like, no, I don't. I just use a bunch of different teas, obviously for like caffeine and like, you know, other purposes, but like, green tea and black tea, like they taste the same. My cousin, who's like younger, I think kind of like learns from me a little bit. It's entertaining though, because we do love going to like 3-4 day music festivals. And so we are amazing at it because like I can not shower for 4 days. Like I don't smell anything. People don't bother me. Like I'll sit in this smelly, gross crowd in Tennessee with 100-degree weather and like, porta potties, I'm amazing at going in porta potties. Like, they don't gross me out. But for the most part, it's kind of a win in a way. You know, it's a really good selling point on dating websites. Like, you know, you can smell like whatever. Fart away.
That's Sarah Feigl. She lives in Seattle. You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today our theme is the benefit of hindsight. Have you ever gotten to know someone, and then circumstances change, and maybe you fall out of touch, and only then do you realize how important that person was to you? Well, this is a story about one of those relationships. It was a work friendship, the kind that often don't last beyond the job, but the connection between these two unlikely confidants persisted. And with the help of a country music record and Bethany Denton, they came back together. Bethany is a contributor to our show, and she takes it from here.
John McCollum and Penny Reagan, aka John Boy and Mama Penny, have the kind of friendship that just feels familiar, even to an outsider like me. That's probably because their friendship started where a lot of friendships do, at work.
I ran the barbecue truck in Red Square at the beautiful University of Washington. And Penny here runs the cafe. So we worked very closely together. That was the kitchen I was based out of for the barbecue truck. So we hit it off pretty quickly, you know, kind of like my kitchen mom.
Well, I'm everybody's kitchen mom. But I've been there for over 44 years. So I've been around a long time. And I remember the day I met him. I thought, oh, great, a cool guy from Texas, you know? And so I told him I liked to call him Tex. He said, okay, Penny, if that's what you want to do. But then you were introduced to me as John. So then when everybody started talking about John Boy, I go, who's John Boy? You know, and I thought they were picking on him, you know, John Boy. Anyway, I'm 64 years old, you guys. Come on, I've had a laugh.
Penny has had a ton of coworkers during her 44 years working at UW, mostly college students that need a lot of babysitting. So John Boy was like a breath of fresh air with his easy laugh and love of country music, particularly the old stuff that Penny loves, like Glen Campbell and Buck Owens.
You work with somebody every day, you got your day-to-day kind of gripes, but after that, you know, like we're sitting there and we both got like 15 minutes left on the clock, we just talk about, you know, frustrations with the job or the boss and what's going on with each other. Like, I'm a textbook overshare kind of person. Like, I'll talk about feelings all day if you let me, you know. So there's not a lot of lifting that needs to go on to get me to open up. So
it makes you a good country musician.
Exactly.
And also, Penny and John Boy each have their favorite stories about working together, like the time Penny lost a roll of quarters at the end of a long day, or the time they screamed together in the walk-in freezer out of sheer frustration. John Boy came to Penny for advice. Penny came to John Boy for a good laugh. He liked to tell her about being in country bands back in Texas, and she liked to talk about her kids and her late husband, Ricky. And that's how it went for about 2 years. But after a while, John Boy needed a change, so he put in his notice and took the last of his vacation days. Do you remember your last day working together?
I know I didn't get to say goodbye. I know I said to him that, you know, I would like to take you out for a beer, you know, and he said, yeah, that would be nice, Penny. And but then he didn't finish his notice, and so, you know, there was never really a chance to really say goodbye or anything like that.
I left, and then I proceeded to have like the worst 6 months of my life. I got broken up with, a really long-term relationship that I've been in, pretty abruptly and acrimoniously. And then I got in a car wreck, and I had to move, and my cat died. And it was just like one thing after another. You know, at a certain point, I think you get almost like kind of punch drunk to it.
In the face of the worst 6 months of his life, John Boy did what any good country musician would do. He wrote a song about how he was feeling. He missed talking to his friend Penny and wondered what advice she would have for him.
I wrote the song because, like, I wanted to talk to Penny. I was like, I knew she'd have something to say about this.
Did you call her?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I probably should have. I was trying really hard to kind of keep things together at that point. That's the thing that a lot of people miss, is that they have more support than they think they do, you know, when things go bad. And that's kind of what the song's about.
What's it called?
And it's called Penny. Gonna make you famous, Penny.
In the years since writing the song, John Boy formed a new band and recorded an album. The song, by the way, is the first track on the new album. Before I met with them, John hadn't even told Penny about the song, let alone shared it with her. So we listened to a recording. Penny's hard of hearing, so John shared some of the lyrics with her.
It's, oh, Mama Penny, 39 years working for the state, buried a husband, but I'm a lightweight, talking about my heart and what I know of pain, but with your help, I'll set me straight.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, and I'm still very overwhelmed that you thought of me enough to write a song. It means a lot, John. Thank you. I haven't had anybody do that for me since my husband. He used to write songs for me. Aww. So it's really nice. Thank you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ricky sang. Mm-hmm. He passed away 9 years ago. I still have his guitar. Yeah.
All the stuff that you've gone through personally, and then to keep on trucking, you know, is something I aspire to, you know. And it's something I wished I could do better. Like, I realize how bad I am at it sometimes, you know. Like I said, I think perspective's important.
But, you know, you shouldn't judge yourself like that. The thing is just surviving. No matter how bad it looks, you just don't give up. You just keep going, you know. I'm proud of the fact that I stuck out working all those years, and it was mostly for raising my children and taking care of my husband, and I've outlasted everybody. I really would like to buy a CD. I'm here to support you, John. Help you with your promotion.
Yeah, how could you not love that, right?
That story from Sound Effect contributor Bethany Denton. You can hear the full song and see pictures of John Boy and Mama Penny at our website, knkxsoundeffect.org.
It'll be all right, and help me see what I'm doing wrong.
Hey, I'm Gabriel Spitzer. This is Sound Effect, and our theme today is Benefit of Hindsight. Jamie Sumaire Constantino lives in Seattle, but she grew up in New Jersey. She had plenty of friends there in her little town, especially this one girl.
She was one of my closest friends and one of my oldest friends, and she was rather popular. She was somebody that everyone flocked to. She was somebody who often had the gatherings at her home.
Those gatherings for meals and pool parties were a big part of Jamie's childhood. But much later, she'd learn things about that home that would shake her life and sense of self to their foundations. A warning, this story contains some difficult material about the exploitation of children. There's nothing explicit, but it may not be appropriate for some listeners. It's about 8 minutes long. Jamie sat down to tell us about the story, starting with her friend's dad.
My impressions of her dad was that he was a very good father when I was really young, and he was very family-oriented, and I saw this mother, father, brother, dogs, nice home, happy daughter who had lots of friends. And so I saw her dad as somebody very dependable, very reliable. And I think a lot of us, meaning a lot of the kids that would come over to the house, would feel that somebody that we can trust. So when I was 17 years old, I got a call on my little red flip phone from somebody claiming that they were with the FBI. They asked if I knew the White family, not the real family name. And I responded yes, and with worry immediately, is everything okay? Is everyone okay? And the agent said that they couldn't tell me what was going on, but they also even noted that I probably knew why they were calling me. And honestly, I had no clue. I had absolutely no idea. At this point, I was living about 40 minutes away from everybody else involved in the situation, and I hadn't heard any news on it. I hadn't seen any news on it. But this agent pretty much told me that my mother needed to take me to a certain address at a certain time on a certain date. I hung up the phone and took out my computer and looked up the family name. I saw a ton of articles, just like an overwhelming amount of information on the White family's father being a child predator and someone who recorded, edited, and distributed child pornography. And my heart sank. I just remember the adrenaline rush still very clearly, and going out to the kitchen and telling my mom, yeah, that was real, and I just have to show you this article. And very, 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 very likely, when we go to that address, they're going to tell me that I am one of the people that he took images of and sent to a lot of people. And having to tell my mom that, I think, was one of the most difficult parts of the whole thing. I just remember feeling so sorry and so guilty when I told my mom. I was feeling oddly guilty about taking a shower, or using a restroom, or changing my clothes, or brushing my teeth. So I just remember being afraid to break both of our hearts and both of our realities and having to deliver that news. So my mom takes me to this address at the time, at the date. It just looked like a regular old house, not an office. But we were greeted by a couple agents. And I think that was when one of the most devastating parts of the whole situation landed for me and for my mom. We saw like the cute little carpet with the train tracks. You know what I'm talking about? And we saw my favorite little toy when I was going to the doctor's as a little kid, where it's like all of the wires and they're the little wooden shapes and you kind of make it like their own little roller coaster ride. And I think that's when it landed for us that the people that are doing the work in this building are also needing to talk and work with incredibly young individuals. I remember it also being a sunny day. So the sun is going through this window at this perfectly normal looking house with these perfectly normal looking toys for small children. And you knew it was not a normal situation. They let us down into kind of a basement area to just a table and a bunch of papers. And there were images that were censored and blurred out of people that I knew in rooms that I remembered very clearly. I was the last, I guess, to know because they were having a difficult time finding me. So what I had to do with these images was turn them over and write the name of the person that I could identify on the back, as well as sign it myself. And I just remember looking at every photo, being able to identify a person, turning it over, going through the heartbreaking part of writing their name down, and also seeing so many other signatures attached. And especially when I got to images of myself, I would just go, oh, that's me. At least my hair looked good that day. And I would turn it over and there would be these signatures of all of these people that I grew up with, all of these kids that I knew that identified me, my face, my body, and knew that I was part of this too with them. It was that odd comfort of not being alone, but also the terror of not being alone. I remember when I was in the office still, this crazy amount of anger that what had happened to me had happened to somebody else before, and I had no clue. That drove me crazier than anything. Wanting to make it better and wanting to take ownership of something. Not having, feeling like you have ownership of your own body, of your own childhood, of your own history, of your relationships with people, and that you will never really have that full ownership because your body is floating around being enjoyed by goodness knows who forever. Even after I die, that's still gonna be there. That's a crazy concept. Initially, it was difficult to feel that anything or anyone was trustworthy. It just felt like reality had shifted, that I felt so dumb that there was something that was happening to me. And I had no idea. I just felt irresponsible. In a way, I felt like I couldn't be trusted. And that was scary. But at the same time, I think what I learned through the FBI calling me on a flip phone 7 years ago, I feel like there's this comfort that I was able to learn what happened to me. That there were people that cared and people that found this predator that contacted me and my family that let me know this happened and really made me feel like they had my back. That also definitely gave me grace and clarity. Being able to do this gives me more grace and clarity than anything I could have ever dreamed of. And to have this be a reality, like almost exactly 7 years from when I first learned about all of this, means the world to me.
Jamie Sumare Costantino teaches in West Seattle. At our website, knkxsoundeffect.org, you can find resources for people who have been victimized by child pornography. This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our theme today is the benefit of hindsight. We've all said or written stuff we regret, right? Well, if you're a musician, once your music is out there, it's hard to undo. Seattle-based songwriter Kimya Dawson has had a long career, and when she looks back on some of her old lyrics, she cringes a little. It's not that it's bad writing, rather, there were words that she wrote then, which she'd never say now. So, how do you take it back? Kimya Dawson joined us in our studio to talk about it.
I guess the first sort of controversy that we had with the songs was the fact that our album was released on 9/11, and there's a song on that album called New York City's Like a Graveyard, and it was suggested to us that we take the song off of the album, and we said, this is a song about hipsters. So we ended up, we left it on the album, but it really, it was intense, you know.
So after that, you know, that's sort of an act of God or whatever you want to call it, that you couldn't possibly have foreseen.
Right.
So what was the next time you went that one of your lyrics kind of gave you pause?
Well, more just like words that I would say back then that I now just sort of as times have changed. And sometimes that's harder to explain to younger generation that wasn't in New York City in the 80s, you know, when certain words were being used even by the people who the words would be offensive to now, like my song Parade. Sarah, Jessica, Tawanda, and the Indian J. Fonda, even Mr. Selfie's in the shade. I use a word to describe some transgender folks that I would never say now. But when...
Are you okay saying it just so people know what we're talking about?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, it's an abbreviated form of the word transgender that is now seen as a slur. And I'm sure maybe to some people back then it was too, but sort of in the parts of that queer community in New York City back then, people were using it to describe themselves. And so I put it in a song, my song Parade. And it's a very lighthearted song about how diverse New York was.
All different kind, yeah. So it's like all the beautiful people. Freak show kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But now I'm like, oh, yeah. If I were to, you know, re-release that album, which I'll have to soon because a lot of my albums are in limbo right now. And when they are reissued, I will figure out a way to change that.
So about a year ago, you wrote online a little bit about some of these issues. What was on your mind at that time that was making you think about it and want to get people's opinions about it?
So the Moldy Peaches album came out, and we had a 7-year license with Rough Trade. And then, you know, they asked us if we were interested in reissuing the record. And I re-listened to the album, and I said, oh, there's this one line in one of our songs that I am way not okay with now. This is actually on New York City's Like a Graveyard, where we dropped the R word. And in our minds, we weren't thinking about people, you know, like with developmental differences. We were just sort of insulting, like, the cool kids of New York City that hang out at bars. I didn't even use that word normally, like, speaking, but when we wrote the song, we did, and we thought it was funny. I mean, it's not that we thought that, like, that word was funny, but we just thought it was a funny song. And so, I don't even know how long ago it was, maybe 10 years now, I had a show in New York, and the guys came up and did a bunch of songs with me, and instead we said Jean-Luc Picard instead.
Did anyone ever say anything to you, or is that something that you just thought?
No one ever said anything about it. I'm sure some people thought it. I did ask online, and the majority of responses were like, don't change anything. It's my favorite album. If you change it, it's going to ruin it for me. And sorry.
Well, what did you make of those reactions?
Well, it was interesting because the more people told me not to change it, the more it made me want to change it. Because it made me realize how little people were thinking about the impact that words could have on more marginalized folks. And regardless of what our intention was when we wrote it, what mattered was how it affected the people who were hearing it. And for the reissue, if I intentionally put it out again in that way, knowing how hurtful that word is and that it's a word I would never, ever speak, I'm just not okay with that. And so I figured it doesn't hurt me to stop using a word. So if somebody tells me that something is offensive, then I'll believe them and I'll find something else I can use.
I guess finally, you know, to some percentage of the population, I feel like the whole conversation that we're having is going to sound like an eye-rolly PC
thing. Oh, yeah, I'm thing. Sure.
So, and like, why should you be so afraid of offending people and so on? And I think it's important to point out, first of all, that you have plenty of things that push limits in your lyrics.
Well, and that's what I tried to explain to people. I was like, taking out this one word that is hurtful and offensive doesn't mean that the Moldy Peaches album is suddenly, like, it's still a pretty dirty album. There's just choices that we make about the way we affect people, and you don't punch down, you know. I did grow up in a daycare center. My family's house was a daycare center, and I was raised to not hurt people and to be nice and to make people feel better and to make people feel stronger. And that's always my intention, is to try to help people, not hurt people. And we're in, you know, pretty tough times right now. And a lot of people are losing their rights and are being oppressed in ways that they have to live in fear all the time. And I absolutely do not want to contribute to making people feel worse than they already do right now.
Kimya Dawson lives in Seattle. You can find links to a bunch of her music at knkxsoundeffect.org.
I wonder if you've ever seen the way the man in the lookout house looks at me before he takes out his teeth and asks me to sign the wall. And I sign his wall with a heel of bread dipped in green listerine, and then I kiss him on the head.
Sound Effect is produced by Kevin Kniestad, Jennifer Wing, and Posey Gruner. We had help this week from Aaron Hennessy, Kari Plogue, Bethany Denton, and Paul Currington of Fresh Ground Stories. Our executive producer is Matt Martinez, and special thanks this week to Sam Dingman of the podcast Family Ghosts, which you should definitely check out. It is really great. But first, you should subscribe to our podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, Spotify, etc. And please send your feedback to soundeffect@knkx.org. We're back next week with a special presentation from our live storytelling show earlier this month. The theme is Small Miracles. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is KNKX.